Rocktape, more than just a tape company. Rocktape keeps athletes of all levels moving stronger, longer.
With the world's best kinesiology tape,
topical pain relief,
mobility equipment,
and protective gear.
And now physical therapists can get 20% off their first purchase right now at shop.rocktape.com.
Just use the code PTPINECAST at checkout to get 20% off.
That's shop.rocktape.com.
With the code PTPINECAST for killer savings of 20% off.
Rocktape, the world's best kinesiology tape.
The first round is on Owen's Recovery Science. Owen's Recovery Science is a single source
for PTs,
OTs,
ATCs,
DCs,
and other medical professionals
seeking certification
in personalized blood flow restriction rehabilitation training. Find out more and get certified
at owensrecoveryscience.com.
All right, this Throwback Thursday, we go back to an interview I did with Lindsay Corbin. She's a professional triathlete who specializes in the 70.3 and 140.6 mile races. She's a complete badass and was nice enough to talk to us while she was training in Hawaii, getting ready for a race. She talks about what it's like being a pro triathlete and what she does to keep her body in shape and how she works hand in hand with her PT to keep her in top shape.
The radio brings into the home, the schoolroom, the hospital, and news of world events.
We're going old school.
This is Throwback Thursday. Digging up something from the past.
Dusting it off and making it new again.
Throwback Thursday
on PT Pinecast.
All right, another episode of the PT Pinecast starts right now. Thanks very much for sharing us on Twitter and on Facebook. We've been reached in 42 different countries, heard over 36,000 times. So I want to say thank you for everybody out there who's listening and actually sharing the show. Now, today, very, very excited to talk to this girl. First stepped on the triathlon stage in 2006. The unknown from Bend, Oregon, made an early statement in the sport. Not only did she win the first two races she ever entered, she went on to set a course record in her first race as a pro. Since then, she's become a household name in the sport of triathlon, achieving a multitude of accolades, including top American at both Ironman and 70.3 World Championship events, and adding 5 Ironman titles to her trophy case in the process. In 2015, she set a new American Ironman record in a time of 8:42:42 at Ironman Austria. That's fast. She's known for the grit and grace attitude she displays on and off the course. She even has it written on her bike. When not racing, she enjoys spending time outdoors with her husband Chris and Golden Retriever Madison. She's also a fan of all things baking, cooking, traveling, Scrabble, and of course, well-made boots. Welcome to the PT Pinecast, Lindsay Corbin.
Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
All right. First question is always the hardest. I know you're a pro triathlete. You got to watch everything that goes into your body, but what are we drinking today?
Well, I'm in Hawaii right now. So while we're recording this, it's nighttime for you and it's still pretty early in the day for me. So no beer for me yet. I will say my husband works at a microbrewery and I have a beer sponsor, which is, I don't think many other pro triathletes have a beer sponsor. So if I were having a beer, it would be a Big Sky Brewing Moosestrel. Largest brewery out of Montana.
Yeah, saw that. Big Sky Brewing, a big supporter of yours. They had some Lindsay Corbin gear whenever you race. And then I was on your website, and I saw you had your very own beer.
Yep. Yeah, so Big Sky Brewing is one of my sponsors. They've been a longtime supporter of mine. And for each world championship event, they do a custom beer and a custom label for the race. So we've done it for 4 or 5 years now in October. I get a custom beer and we have a happy hour party before the race, which is kind of surprising. But it's earlier in the week, just it's a way for me to interact with fans and for people to kick back and relax before the race. Usually people are really stressed out and it's kind of good to remember that ultimately we're all doing it for fun. So usually a beer helps out with that.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah, on her website, lindsaycorbin.com, I was just doing a little background and I saw that. I'm like, she's got her own beer? This girl's right up my alley. It feels weird to talk to someone like you and say, yeah, I'm a triathlete and just look at what you've done. It just feels weird to call myself the same thing as you. And obviously you put the word pro in front of that. But before you were a pro triathlete, what were you doing and how did you make that jump?
Well, I was studying exercise physiology at the University of Montana. Grew up as a runner and a ski racer. And I first went to UC Davis in California, and I had ambitions of running there collegiately. Was way different than high school program, college was, and didn't really like it as much and was injured a lot. And so I transferred to the University of Montana. In Montana, I joined a local club triathlon team called Team Stampede. And I think you talked to Elliot Bassett.
Yeah.
And he was on the team with me. Basically, it was a local club team, people that were working 9 to 5, and they'd get off work or they'd get done with college and sort of train when they were done with classes at the end of the day or first thing in the morning. And it was just fun. And we would travel around to races and go on like spring break trips and do all sorts of challenging things. And I liked it because it was a way to like have a competitive outlet. But it wasn't super structured, and I liked the variety too of introducing swimming and biking. I'd done some biking growing up, mainly mountain biking, sort of as cross training. Mm-hmm. My swimming experience was like just playing at the lake. I'd never swum a lap or anything. But yeah, so I joined up with the collegiate team and the local team. Just was having fun with it and enjoying it, and I was finishing school in 2006, and a bunch of people that I was studying with and that going to college with were doing the Ironman in Coeur d'Alene. And I thought I wanted to do something symbolic to celebrate being done with school. And so I signed up for Ironman Coeur d'Alene in 2006. And that's sort of when I really started applying myself to training, and I followed a training plan for the first time. And the thought of doing an Ironman scared the crap out of me. So I knew I had to dot all my I's and cross all my T's. So yeah, I didn't miss out on a bunch of training and just stuck to a plan and followed it. And I got super fit doing that. Leading up to the race, I competed in a few shorter distance half Ironman events and had great success with those. And so I was finished with school and I wasn't sure what I was going to do. And someone was like, maybe you should race professionally. So not only did I do my first Ironman, but the week before I got my professional license, not only did I do my first Ironman, but it was also sort of my first really big professional race as well.
So walking into an Ironman, and I've done two a little bit slower than you, but I've done two, and just the jitters right there of just walking into your first race, but you've got, oh, now they're tagging me with pro, and you get to rack with the pros and you get to start with the pros. That's got to pile it on just a little bit more butterflies.
Yeah, I will say, I think I mentioned earlier that swimming is my weakness,
right?
And I didn't grow up swimming. And so in 2006, I definitely was not the caliber of swimmer that I am now. Not to say that I'm a great swimmer now, but I'm much improved. And the thought of doing the mass start at the Ironman absolutely scared the crap out of me. And so half of my incentive for turning pro was that I would only have to start with 50 women versus 3,000 people of the masses. So
yeah,
that was definitely some incentive. So I will say I've actually never experienced the whole mass start. Like I've done it maybe in shorter races, but in the professional races, we tend to get a head start and we get our own separate start. So I feel like I missed out on the whole mass start of the age group race. But
I've been plowed over my first Ironman at Ironman Wisconsin. I stopped to like adjust my goggles for like 2 seconds, and I was gonna stop and smell the roses and kind of look around. Half a second into me adjusting my goggles, I just got plowed over. And I'm just under the water going, oh yeah, I guess there's a bunch of people behind me and around me and in front of me. I really just can't stop in the middle. Yeah, there's nowhere to go. I always say triathlon is a sport that allows me to be mediocre at three things in one day. And you mentioned the variety, and that's just kind of what drew me to the sport. And ultimately, triathlon was that bridge for me going from a radio DJ to ultimately a PT student and eventually a PT. So get a chance to talk to someone like you is really, really cool. What was that like making that jump? After that, you do your first race and you kind of started crushing it right away. Way, kind of a steep learning curve, right? Went right up.
Well, I definitely did. Just to clarify, the Ironman wasn't my first triathlon,
right?
But I'd done like the summer before, I did some sprints and Olympics, and then sort of my end of the summer deal was I did a half Ironman. So I didn't just jump straight into the Ironman. I definitely had a pretty steep learning curve. And yeah, I mean, I think I just enjoyed the variety of it, the idea of learning new things. I'd never really ridden a bike before, and I really fell in love with the idea of riding a bike, of the concept of like seeing places on two wheels. Like my favorite workout still, even today, is like big, long adventure rides where you're gone all day and climbing up huge mountain passes, and you get to see places on two wheels, like I said, that some people spend all day in a car getting to do. And just the fact that you utilize your body to get to those destinations, and just the friendships I forged along the way and memories, things like that. I really enjoyed biking. And then I also love challenges and sort of testing limits. And so the challenge of not being a swimmer and sort of learning how to swim has been kind of a cool project. And it's been interesting to like see myself evolve. And every year I'm learning, you know, how to be a better athlete, and philosophies are changing of, you know, different training plans and different coaches that I've worked with. And so I kind of like that aspect of it, of sort of seeing what works and what doesn't. And I think it's very individual from athlete to athlete from my experience.
Yeah, absolutely. I read a quote that you had said, and part of it was, if you're doing what you love, worst case scenario, you'll enjoy the journey. And that's really what triathlon's all about. If you've ever trained for one and then raced it, I mean, race day is ultimately just a victory lap for all the time and effort you've put in. Exactly. And if you don't enjoy that training, man, you're in the wrong sport.
Yeah, definitely.
So you mentioned looking to go collegiately in California to run, and you being injured. And of course, if you do that much training and you're doing it at a high level, you're going to get hurt. So where was rehab, and you were an exercise science major, where's rehab and staying healthy and preparing to prevent injuries come into your training?
It's super important. When I signed up to be a pro athlete, and even when I signed up for my first Ironman, no one talked to me about the injury part of it. They were all like, oh, it's so fun, and people are having a few beers, and they talk to you signing up, and you're like, this is a great idea. And you think it's just swim, bike, run, swim, bike, run. So early on in my career, I didn't pay much attention to injuries or taking care of myself. I think 2 years after I'd been racing Ironman, I started to get my first injury. That was no fun. So that was sort of my wake-up call, that you have to do a lot more than just swimming, biking, and running, and that recovery is really important and taking care of your body is really important. Unfortunately, had my fair share of injuries, but every time I have one, I learn something new about myself, sort of apply it to becoming a better athlete. Being injured is not fun at all, but I think it's kind of part of the job, unfortunately, as I've learned. I don't know many athletes that are sort of walking that fine line that don't end up with some sort of injury, whether you're elite or amateur.
Yeah, grind you down. I think with the amateur athletes like me, a weekend warrior, we try to stuff a week's worth of training into, well, when I can get into it after work, or when I can jam it into 2 days on the weekend, you know, maybe I'll just try to bike because I don't have much time during the week. And that's going to lead to injuries. And that's going to lead to people eventually either having to bail out of the sport, bail out of a race, or head to physical therapy. I saw that you had worked with Jay Deshari out of Bend, Oregon. He's mm-hmm. a big name that pops up. Loved his book, Anatomy for Runners. It's written really, really well. If you're a PT, I suggest you read it, because he speaks really intelligently, but he also is very, very relatable in his writing anyway. I've never actually spoken to him, but is he that way in person?
Yeah, Jay's awesome. If you want to have him on the show, I can definitely...
Yeah, hook me up. Yeah.
So I met Jay in 2013. That summer, I'd been dealing with shin splints in my left shin, which then ultimately turned into a stress fracture in July. I did the walking boot and took time off. And then I was just starting to return to running again in late August. A similar pain came back right away. I was definitely healed by then. You know, I'd been in the walking boot for half the summer and paid my dues with the time off. And someone had suggested, oh, you should meet up with Jay Deshari. I actually wasn't living in Bend at the time, but I went to Bend to visit Jay and to do some training, ultimately to get ready for the Ironman World Championships in Kona. So yeah, so I met Jay in September of 2013. I think it was like right after Labor Day weekend. Let him know my history and what was going on. And he said right off the bat, well, first of all, he's just a fireball full of energy. So he was super excited. I'm like, I don't know who gets excited about this kind of stuff. Pretty sure I was
crying. PTs do.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I was crying. But he just said, you know, what are your goals? And I said, well, I've qualified for the World Championships, which are in 6 weeks, and my goal is to compete there. And he asked me what my best finish was, and it had been fifth. I said, you know, I'd really like dream goal considering all this would be top 10. He asked me how fast I'd run there before, and I told him, I think it was like around a 3:07. He looked at me and he was like, if you listen to everything I tell you to do for the next 6 weeks, I think that you can definitely get in the top 10, and I think you can run a personal record. And I was like, no way. I didn't believe it. And so I spent basically 2 hours a day with Jay for the next month, basically an hour to 2 hours a day. Usually an hour was getting actual physical therapy done, where Jay was breaking up the scar tissue in my lower tibia and my shins and my calves. And then the other hour of the day was doing strengthening exercises. Jay's philosophy was that, rather than having me get in all the long runs, that I missed out on. He was going to make me super durable. So most of the time in triathlon, athletes later in the day, their form starts to break down because they don't have the strength to maintain it. And Jay's idea was that let's make you as strong as possible and bulletproof. And so at mile 15 to 20, when your competitors' forms are falling apart, you're actually going to be super strong and your form's going to be held together and you're going to be more efficient and you're going to be able to run faster than all of them. So I listened to what he said and I did walk jog program. And finally, about a month out, I was starting to do some consistent running. But my longest run before the race was 9 miles. It was an hour and like 5 minutes. And we focused a lot on speed work, quality, not quantity, doing a lot of explosive plyometric strength movements, really heavy weights at the gym. And this was all stuff I'd never done before. So Jay sort of opened my eyes to like a whole new world, basically. About a week before I was to head to Hawaii for the race, I decided to book Jay a ticket and he came to Hawaii with me because he'd done so much awesome stuff. I was afraid to go without him.
Yeah.
And it was a very unconventional lead up to the World Championships. I'd raced there in 06, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. So this was 2013. And I'd never had a lead up like this before. And I really didn't know what to expect. I mean, most of my other races I'd gotten in 18, 19, 20 mile runs. And this one was one run of 9 miles.
Right.
That was it. You know, before the race, Jay had me at the gym lifting. Like 2 days before the race, I was doing pull-ups, explosive movements in the gym. And I thought it was crazy.
It's counterintuitive.
I also like didn't have any other choice. Like I surrendered to Jay at that point and I had zero expectations. I'd been pretty much written off by all the press, which was fine. Like it was understandable. And so race day came and I had not that great of a swim. I was a little disappointed and I was a little lackluster on the bike. And actually the best part of my race was the marathon. With maybe 2 miles to go, I was in 11th place. Anyone that's been to Ironman Hawaii, the last mile is all downhill down this famous hill, Palani Hill. Jay and my family were there at the top of Palani Hill and I could see 10th place. Then they sprinted down to the finish and I was sprinting to the finish and I basically had a sprint finish with this other gal, Amanda Stevens, and I passed her with like on the last corner with maybe a quarter mile to go and I felt so bad passing her, but I was in so much pain, but it was like a good pain.
Yeah.
And I finished 10th and I ran a 3:04 marathon.
Wow, so good for you.
Jay is the bomb.com. Best PT ever. And like since then now I just drive him nuts. Like he can't get rid of me. So you had asked me earlier. So I now see Jay regularly, just even when I'm healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And I see him once a week, usually if I'm healthy, and if I've got some issues cropped up, twice a week. We usually spend half the appointment doing manual therapy, working on tight areas that I have or imbalances. And then the other half of the appointment, he usually is giving me new exercises. It's just dependent on my needs. Like if I'm doing a bunch of swimming, we'll work on some shoulder stuff. I definitely have chronic, like my right leg is a little bit not as stable as my left leg. And so we definitely tend to work a lot on the right leg and doing sort of right leg balance exercises. And then when I'm not in to see Jay, every day at home, I spend about 30 minutes doing, I call them Jay-zercises. So they're essentially the exercises that Jay gives me for the week.
Cool.
And I'm still lifting the heavy weights. Definitely not year-round, but a lot of the year I'm in the gym doing strength work as well.
And that's what I think a lot of triathletes have always shied away from. And as you alluded to, the thought of only running 9 miles before you go out and run a marathon, man, as a triathlete or distance runner, we get freaked out about that. But you said a couple of things. Number one, I don't want to discount this. Jay asked a very important question. What is your goal? And I think that's a very important question for a PT to ask a patient. And then another thing you said was he wanted to focus on quality and not quantity at that point. And he was going to get ready to make sure that you were bulletproof. And I think that's one thing that a lot of triathletes, and I think it's on us as PTs, is to make sure that our patients know that you need to be strong even if you're doing a long one-plane sport. Even if you're just swimming and biking and running in one direction, you still need to be strong. And that showed for you at the end of that big, long 140.6-mile race.
Exactly. And I think like my fear at first when Jay told me like we're going to have you lifting max weight, you know, I'd lifted before a little bit before Jay, but it was like sets of 20 and they were really lightweight because I didn't bulk up. Yeah, exactly. Jay's like, we're going to have you lift max weights and you're not going to bulk up. And he was right. I was afraid that I would just get huge, right. Which I'm actually a pretty petite person. So that's kind of funny to think I'd get huge. but it was definitely different than what I thought it would be like. It makes a lot of sense. So I'm glad that I've met Jay and we've crossed paths, and he's a huge part of what I do.
Read online something on his blog about your training and him working with you is instead of thinking outside the box, you just threw the box away and started building a new one. Talked to Matt Lieto earlier this week, and he had a great quote. He's like, I don't need to train to be fast. I need to train to be strong. And I think that's exactly what you were just saying right there is we do need to have strength, even if we're doing these long, long distance races. Got to be strong. That's the foundation right there.
And I think the other unique thing about Jay is similar to how his book is written, what you said is that the things he teaches us or teaches me when I go in for my PT appointments are all very relatable to running. So rather than like giving you exercises and you can't understand how that's going to translate to making you a better athlete, he has a good job of explaining the exercises. And if it doesn't make sense to you, then he'll basically show you the same exercise that's activating your glute, but in a way that makes sense to you as an athlete. So you actually understand what you're doing and you can see how it's applicable to making yourself a better athlete. And he's constantly fired up.
Yeah.
It's a lot of energy. I can't keep up with it.
Yeah. That's awesome though. All right. We're going to take a 60-second break. When we come back, I want to talk to Lindsay about grit and Grace and how she got that moniker. I want to walk through a week of your training because I want you to make me feel really, really weak and really, really slow and hear what you do on a regular training week as a pro triathlete. And then I want to hear about more about beer. I want to hear about Big Sky just a little bit. Back in 60 seconds with Lindsay Corbin. Want to thank our sponsors, Arias Medical Staff, and you can find out more information about how you can get a job anywhere in the U.S. doing the thing you want to do, which is this physical therapy thing, with Arias. A-U-R-E-U-S medical.com. And one common misconception that I want to get out of the way right away, it doesn't cost you anything. Yeah, they're not trying to get money out of you and then find you a job. They're just sitting there with a bunch of jobs, and you're sitting there wanting to go to different places and travel around and be a PT. Match made in heaven. Arias is the leader. They'll get it done for you. A-U-R-E-U-S medical.com. Paid travel and housing benefits, positions in all of the 50 states, a variety of different settings, plus Con Ed money too. That's a big question in travel physical therapy. Great way to see the country, and you can do it as a new grad, a seasoned professional. A-U-R-E-U-S medical.com. That's Arias. These guys have supported the show from the beginning. So we want to make sure you support them. And by the way, they're going to support you by getting you a job doing some PT. The PT Pinecast is powered by Smart Tools, the next generation of instrument-assisted soft tissue mobilization. The fastest growing approach to IASTM is Smart Tools from high-quality American-made tools. Smart Tools. Find them online at smarttoolsplus.com.
Let's give a nice, warm welcome to...
We're back. It's so great to see you. Let's get back to the show now. And we're back on the PT Pinecast with pro triathlete Lindsay Corbin. You can check her out online. Twitter handle is at Lindsay Corbin. That's L-I-N-S-E-Y Corbin. Tonight, I am enjoying, courtesy of Evolution Craft Brewing in Salisbury, Maryland, the Secret Spot Winter Ale. It's very, very good. You're in Hawaii. You don't understand the plight that I'm going through on the East Coast right now. It's cold. It's dreary. So we got to drink a beer. So in Hawaii for what? Training? What are we doing out there?
Yep. So I'm here on a train-cation.
Oh, man. That's a rough life.
Half vacation, half training. We've had snow on the ground in Bend since Thanksgiving, and now is the time of year when I do a lot of my base training, and I knew I was going to be pretty out of shape this year after taking a big break from racing last year. So I thought rather than beat myself up with all the indoor training to find fitness that I would come to Hawaii. So my husband and I were here for Christmas, and I've stayed a little bit longer and just sort of doing some base building.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, we're going to get a chance to see you. You're coming back to the East Coast, though, coming up on the 23rd, yep. Right? We're going to be at the Richmond Endurance Athlete Symposium, and you can check out more information online at richmondendurancesymposium.com. They're at the Westin in Richmond, Virginia. Very excited about that because we're going to get MDs, we're going to get strength and conditioning guys, we're going to get professional athletes and PTs all in the same room and not talking about each one of our disciplines, but all talking about what it takes to make sure that endurance athlete stays on the course
And so I'm very excited to hear what you have to say about that. But how do we get grit and grace? I saw a video online, showed a picture of your bike, and it had grit and grace nicely calligraphied into the paint job. Where'd that come from?
Yeah, it's just a moniker maybe my husband or a couple people have used when it comes to describing me. And I just think the type of athlete I am is someone that's really gritty and resilient, fierce competitor. So I think that that's like the grit side of my personality. And then the grace side is that I'm a woman and a female. I like to dress up. Mm-hmm. But I also enjoy a lot of other things outside of racing, and I try to be a gracious competitor. And so I think it's just the two contrasts combined, and that makes me.
Yeah, that's cool. So what are we doing next year? Do you line up your races now? Do you pick one or two, or how does that work?
We are on a points system to qualify for the World Championships, which are in October in Hawaii. And so the first part of the year, I'm going to be racing some shorter distance events. They're regional championship events, so they have higher points rankings and more competitive fields. And so I'm actually going to be racing the weekend after the symposium in Virginia. Oh, wow. In Panama. So that's going to be my taper activity, is soaking up the East Coast atmosphere. Hopefully that'll pump me up for a good race. But cool. Yeah, so I'll be racing in Panama and then Puerto Rico and then Brazil. And that'll take me to April. And then I'm going to see where I'm at as far as points go. For us, we don't have to sign up for our races till about a month before. So either race an Ironman in early May or in June, just depending on how I'm feeling.
That's really cool. And if you ever need, if Jay is not available to travel with you, I will be graduated in a couple of months. I can be your personal PT. I charge $0 to just travel to those locations too. So what are they called again? Jazzercises?
Oh yeah, Jazzercises.
I like
J-A-Y and then a dash and then Z dash and then Ursizes.
I like that very much. So what are some good ones? Let me steal one of maybe either your favorites or maybe a least favorite, because it's so hard, but at least it's effective. What's a couple of good ones?
Well, the first one is a funny one, and that would be cookie eating.
Yeah, all right, what's that?
Jay loves to eat cookies, so if he's listening, he'll get mad that I didn't throw him a bone about cookies. But
all right.
That's not an exercise, but he's a big component of eating cookies and having a balanced lifestyle.
Good.
So exercise number one. Let's see. So my philosophy has always been that a lot of stuff happens in the hips. And I think Jay feels the same, like a lot of structural sound points are in the hips. So we're constantly working on using stable hips and getting strong hips and having them balanced. And so for a while, I haven't, knock on wood, I was having IT band problems with my right IT band, like nothing that inhibited me from running, but it was definitely sort of like my IT band's feeling tight. And a lot of it was originating from up in my hip, which, shocking. Everyone thinks it's like, oh, my knee hurts.
Yep.
But it's actually your hip that's the problem. So we do a lot of hip lifts. I mean, usually I can do those anywhere. I do 50 a day and just stand on the stair with one leg and then use the hip to drop the other leg down and then use the hip to bring it back up. I'm sure everyone knows that.
Yeah.
It's pretty basic. Yep. Good old standby. There's one exercise that Jay prescribes that I can't stand and I have to do all the time, and that's the rotisserie chicken.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think it's definitely a Jazzercise because nobody else has really heard of it. Essentially, one of your legs is the spit and your hip is the chicken that's rotating around the spit. When I'm not that strong, we do it standing. You'll stand on one leg like a flamingo, and your hips have to stay parallel to the ground, and your shoulders stay forward, and your hip essentially rotates around the leg like a spit. So your hip is the chicken, and it's rotating around the leg. And when you get stronger, you can do it on the ground. And so you lay down on the floor and you go into a hip bridge.
Okay.
So single leg hip bridge. And the idea is that your knee the whole time has to be facing forward. And so if you're bridged up, let's say your left leg is on the ground, your hips are level, and then you drop that right hip, and then you use your glutes and your hip to bring that hip up and above. And meanwhile, the knee is staying on the ground the whole time. And then when you're super advanced, you get to put that left leg in a sling, like a TRX strap.
Right.
And that's Jay's favorite. So
wow.
And then the new one that we've introduced this year that I think is super hard for me, I've heard it's because I have a longer wingspan, is just the ab roll machine. Mm-hmm. Not only does it utilize the core, but also a lot of stability in the shoulders. I think, you know, with swimming, my shoulders obviously get tight and weak, but also with running, we're working on having equal motion and sort of good movement in my shoulder area. So the ab roll is, I hated it at first, and now I've actually gotten pretty good at it. So but the ab roller is a good one.
I like that. I'm going to steal some of those Jaycercises, right? All right. So I want you to make me feel really slow. All right. What is your what is your fastest halftime and what fastest full time?
My fastest half is, I think it's around 4 hours and 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. And my fastest full would be in 2014. I set the American record at Ironman Austria, and that was 8:42:42.
Yeah, I mean, you're a little bit faster than me. I get, you know, maybe if I just got an aero helmet or something like that, a little bit faster. So before we let you go, walk me through a typical middle of the training plan work week. How many hours are you out there? How many different swims, bikes, and runs?
Generally, like in a big week, I'll be between 20 and 25 hours. Sometimes I'll creep a little bit over 25, not much. So I swim usually 6 days a week.
Wow.
Usually I swim around 25 to 30,000 yards or meter. Wow. Well, we swim meters, 25 to 30,000 meters a week. Swim around 5K a day. So 5 to 6 days a week.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what are we riding? I'm even scared to ask how much you're riding a week.
Anywhere from 11 hours to 18 hours. It just depends.
Wow.
But on average, I'd say 14 hours, 13 hours. That's pretty solid week of riding.
Okay. So, and on your 2 feet running?
I don't run a ton. My coach is a lot. He's a big proponent of consistency in running, not duration, but durability. Mm-hmm. So we run maybe 5 to 6 days a week. I don't do any crazy long runs. So I used to early on in my career do like 2 hours, 220, and then run 30 minutes that night. Now 2 hours would be a long run for me. And if I run that long, it's usually split up. I think actually the longest I ran last year, I ran 1:10 in the morning and then 1 hour that night.
Okay.
So 2 hours and 10 minutes. But yeah. If I were to run 2 hours, it would be split up. It wouldn't all be at once. And the idea of splitting it up, for people that aren't aware, is that if you go on like a 2 hour run, you know, traditionally people do their big long bike ride on Saturday and then they go run their 2 hours on Sunday. A, they're trashed and they're tired for that 2 hour run, which is great for Ironman training. But their form is pretty sloppy, particularly by the end of a 2 hour run. So the idea of running 1 hour in the morning is, okay, you're kind of tired, but you're still holding your form the whole time. And then you take a, you know, 4 hour break between. And then when you do your 2nd hour that night, hopefully you're still able to hold form.
Are you still working with Jay and lifting weights and doing strength training in this week as well, in that sort of training week?
Yep. Yeah. So I would, if I'm home, I would see Jay usually on Wednesday mornings. And then, yeah, every morning, it depends. But usually if I'm swimming at 5:30, I go to the gym right after swimming.
Good.
And I'll either lift at the gym or I'll do my PT exercises. But if I don't set aside time like that, like if I say, oh, I'll do my PT exercises tonight while I'm watching TV, I don't do them.
Yeah.
So I usually make a point of going to the gym and being like 30 minutes. And that's how long the program usually takes.
Good.
Whether it's the Jaycercises, which are more non-strength based, but like balance, stability, things like that. And then the lifting, I either lift or I'm doing the PT exercises every day. 30 minute program. So it's actually not, I think people are afraid of committing to like, oh, it takes so much time to go to the gym and lift, blah, blah, blah. But it's 30 minutes. And that's, to me, that's not that much time.
Right. Just getting the most out of your time in the gym and just doing the right stuff right away instead of just kind of walking around and doing a bunch of stuff that's not going to necessarily help you build that stable base.
It's usually just 3 lower body exercises and 3 upper body.
Cool.
Pretty easy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Every episode, Lindsay, is a pint. But before we're done with the pint, we do shots. And what I mean by shots is parting shots.
Oh, nice.
So if you had any advice for PTs or strength and conditioning coaches that are working with endurance athletes, specifically triathletes, what's something that you'd want to make sure that these PTs would know? That they don't have to be necessarily working with a pro triathlete, since the sport is exploding recently, is the weekend warriors, the guys like me, the age groupers. What's something that the PT should know in working with a triathlete?
A few things. Like, I think I've worked with a handful of PTs, and Jay is definitely my favorite because he's fun. fun and motivational to work with. And so I think keeping it fun, you know, a big part of that is knowing what your client is going to do. There's no point assigning exercises to your client that they're going to go home and not do. So I would just make sure that the exercises are fun and that it's something that the client is going to want to do. And a lot of that comes from the PT himself. You know, like if you're energetic and excited about it, I think it's going to make your client excited about it. But I know a lot of PTs, and I'm sure there's nothing more frustrating than giving out exercises and seeing your client 10 days later and they've done none of them.
Absolutely.
So, and then on the converse side, I would say that most triathletes are pretty type A, don't know how to chill out, are always going to be pushing the boundaries. And so that's probably not really a tip. I would say most PTs know that, but just know that triathletes are always going to be pushing the limits, wanting to do more and not letting their body rest. And I think as far as advice for triathletes go, my advice would just be that it's okay to relax a little bit, and that rest and recovery, I think, is a mistake that I see most people not paying enough attention to. Paying more attention to rest and recovery actually increases your performances.
Good advice from Lindsay Corbin. Looking forward to seeing you and hearing you speak at the Richmond Endurance Symposium coming up on January 23rd in Richmond, Virginia. I'll cross my fingers that it warms up a little bit. I know you're out in Hawaii right now and going to all those southern places. RichmondEnduranceSymposium.com is where you can check out information about that. This is the third year that they've got all the endurance professionals in one room. So, hey, good luck to you in your training and this upcoming season. We want to see you out there on the course. And it was really awesome to talk to you and get some insight.
Cool. Thanks for having me.
Like what you hear? Leave us a review on iTunes. It's not like our moms can keep giving us 5 stars every day. Or can they? The PT Pinecast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. Our lawyers made us read that.